You are listening to the Hirschsprung's Hour on UK Health Radio, where I interview incredible people with a connection to Hirschsprung's disease and other associated conditions, such as IBD, IBS, Crohn's, colitis, and ulcerative colitis. Each week, I bring you a new and exciting interview with people from all walks of life, including charity founders, models, and professional sports people. We go through the ups and downs of having Hirschsprung's with a positive message throughout. Welcome to episode 2 of Tom's Hirschsprung's podcast. This is the first episode to feature a very special guest. She's an entrepreneur, a medical mum, a content creator, and an all-round inspiration for others. She's Kyla Thompson. Kyla, how are you?
Hello. Hi. This is my husband, Lyle.
Hello, Lyle.
He's grabbing some hockey gear, taking our son for a skate. We're from Canada, so
yes.
Playing some hockey today. Yeah, and thanks for that introduction. That's awesome.
How has your new year been so far?
Really, really great. Very typical, not very medical, which has been a nice change for us. Yes. Yeah, we got to be home and see family and friends and just, you know, take it easy and feel relaxed.
Live a normal life.
Yeah.
That's it. Before we get started into what's happening today, the fantastic work that you do, Bella do, and your family do, I want to take a short view back to the past, into Bella's miraculous medical journey and her three extremely rare conditions. What were they?
She was born with, but we didn't know at the time, of course, that she had Hirschsprung's disease, which eventually was labeled long segment Hirschsprung's disease, as well as no immune system, which is called severe combined immune deficiency. That meant she had no T cells and no B cells when she was born. No infection fighters, no virus fighters. And she was also born with dwarfism. Genetically, it's a mystery. Geneticists in both provinces, Saskatchewan and Alberta, took 2 years to diagnose her with cartilage hair hypoplasia related to Omenn syndrome. And there's still lots I'm learning about her form of dwarfism that is also very rare. So
she's very much still a walking medical mystery experiment, all of those things, I guess.
Miracle, yeah. For sure. She's brought light. I'm most, you know, out of the darkness of those conditions, she has helped specialists all over the world realize more about each one of these conditions. And because each one of the conditions she has the most rare form of, but there's other forms of these conditions that are less rare and more common. And she's helping kids with those. Like typical Hirschsprung's or a different form of immune deficiencies and dwarfisms. Yes. So she's like this rare gem that is helping such a vast part of the rare disease community.
Does that give you and Bella an enormous sense of pride, I guess, as well, that yes, you've had like incredibly, I guess, unfortunate luck with having so many conditions all at once. I mean, what are the chances? But does that give you a sense of like pride that you're really going out? And obviously we'll talk about all the other fantastic work you and Bella do as well, but that just by having these conditions you are helping people as well.
Yeah, I think I look at it as, you know, Bella's 10 now. So it's been 10 years of picking up pieces of what each of these rare conditions mean. and still learning year by year. So the first couple years, they were really dark and scary and unknown. Not just for a month or two till we got a diagnosis. It was over 2 years till we got full diagnosis of everything. And so it's for me, it's more like, okay, now that I understand what each of these conditions actually mean and do to a person that has them, I'm just happy that the knowledge that we have, we can help other people with. Because as far as we know, there's no one out there in this world that has a story like ours. But there's lots of people that have stories that are similar, in the medical world. And I'm just happy that we have come out on the other side, in a sense that my child is still alive. Bella's alive. She's thriving. And I'm just happy we can give other people hope.
Yeah, for
Yeah.
sure, for sure.
Yeah.
And just for anybody, obviously this podcast is very much about helping people who do go through Hirschsprung's and other associated conditions. But just to be sure, there's no signs during pregnancy. Nothing was said to you. No, nothing.
Nope. Nothing. There was a couple of clues with her dwarfism, and that was it. Our province at the time also did not screen for SCID, whereas I think every state in America does. There's more provinces now that do in Canada. But if there was more testing done for newborns in our area at the time, we would have known at birth. But we didn't have that. So during pregnancy, the only clue to her being little was her doctor noticed that her growth in the womb kind of plateaued around the second trimester. And so my doctor sent me for an MRI. But she was looking great. They were really happy with how she was breathing and looking, and like she was like a great baby. She was very active. She let me know she was there. She's ready to party. And they were like, yeah, she just might be little. And at the time, I had no connections with anybody with dwarfism. So I was like, oh, so she'll be smaller, maybe just a smaller human. But I didn't realize that that meant dwarfism at the time.
No, those are no absolutely no clues at all. I
No.
want to talk about skid as well, because it wasn't something that I had heard of at all. And doing the research into SCID, I've noticed there's been a big UK review into SCID around here. And it's going through till March 2024. I mean, we've had SCID for quite a while.
Yeah.
But it's not everywhere, is it? And it's so vitally important. And do you just want to share some of your experiences around skid and why that's so important to catch early?
Yeah, it is so important to catch early. I know through living in the medical world with Bella's immunologists and hematologists, that have helped her through her bone marrow transplant for SCID. They are much more aware of what screening can do for newborns. If Bella would have been screened at birth, it would have saved us an entire year in hospital. She spent the first 2 years of her life in hospital consecutively. And a large part of that was SCID was just unknown in our country as a whole, especially our province. Also, having found out she had Hirschsprung's disease at 3 days old overshadowed everything else. It was all about keeping her alive because her bowels were so affected. So SCID was like on the back burner. We didn't even realize she didn't have an immune system. We didn't know what SCID was until we got transferred to a hospital in the province next to us, Alberta. And thankfully, our immunologist at the time had dealt with two other cases so far. So Bella was like one of her first in Canada to figure out. And then on top of that, I remember, so our immunologist, when we found, there's a whole story about how we found out she had SCID at 11 months old. But I remember our specialists in Calgary constantly reaching out to specialists in Newcastle. That was like they really knew what how to deal with SCID, and they got a lot of their bone marrow transplant learning from Newcastle. So we have a connection there. So I was really thankful. I learned a lot about how much that hospital in Newcastle did for patients and babies with SCID. But it was, Hirschsprung's disease, having been born with that and that being the focus, really kind of overshadowed the fact that Bella was also born with no immune system. And I remember when we found out she had SCID, her specialist told me, and like you don't hear this from a doctor very often, but they told me they don't know how she's alive, and it's a miracle she's survived.
The station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
That's incredible. Absolutely incredible. What do you? I guess it's difficult to go right back to that time, but how do you feel at that point when they say, "Well, we don't know, it's a miracle"? What runs through? Because I know very similarly to my parents when they said to my parents, "Yeah, we're not too sure how he's going. He's just keeps going." And I remember speaking to my parents about it, and they said, "Well, we didn't really know what to think." So how was that for you, being told, "Well, we don't really know what's going on, but she's still here and she's still going"? How does that feel?
There's quite a comparison with Hirschsprung's and SCID for Bella that's always really darkened the Hirschsprung's disease for me. I feel for people that have that because with Hirschsprung's, trying to figure that out for her from 3 days old was always a hit and miss. It was a surgery, another surgery. Nope, that surgery didn't fix it. We're still having problems. And those problems were graphic and harsh. Like I would see my baby from 3 days old until she was a year throwing up like 10, 8, 10 times a day, can't keep anything down. And then her bowels being so affected that, that was stool coming up sometimes. And it was really, really, really hard that first year. And nothing was fixing it. She had four bowel surgeries before we found out she had SCID. So that's where the doctors were flabbergasted because they had gone in, worked on her bowels, exposing her entire blood system to stool. And of course, thank God, like they're so good at what they do. But even like SCID, the common cold, babies don't survive the common cold when you don't have an immune system, like let alone bowel surgery. So she had gone septic, and they were thinking, oh, well, she just had bowel surgery. She's septic because stool got in her blood system. Meanwhile, it's like, no, her body legit can't fight it. So that's where they were like, how is she alive? And with the just going back to how Hirschsprung's and SCID are so like, Hirschsprung's is so much more difficult to deal with. When we found out she had SCID, they had fix. They were like, okay, we know she has no immune system. We put her on the donor registry. We get her a donor. We give her a bone marrow transplant. That's a fix. Hirschsprung's, there was never a fix. It was always surgery that didn't work, or treatments, or just so many medical procedures to try and help her bowels work until we got to the point where they said, she needs a transplant. They need to be completely removed.
Yeah. I wanted to touch on bone marrow transplant because recently, I think the 22nd of December, it was my time to give blood, I think every sort of 4 months or so. And they said, do you want to be on the bone marrow transplant list? And I didn't really know what it was, despite having Hirschsprung's, despite going in and out of hospital for 18 plus years. I didn't really know what it was. And I thought, you know, it's really complicated and, you know, then I have to go in and take stuff out your hip and all of this stuff. But I've got the pamphlet here. And really, there's now two ways of taking bone marrow. You can do the old-fashioned way, the going through the hip and whatnot, but you can have bone marrow through blood stem cells. So, again, this podcast is sort of all about inspirational stories, but also educating as well. And for anybody who thinks, oh, it's going to be really painful, it's going to be really horrible, it's going to be this, that, the other, all the now you can give bone marrow through blood stem cells. You take, it says here, you take a special drug for 4 days, which encourages the blood stem cells to move from your bone marrow to the bloodstream. So it's not as painful or as horrible as it sounds. And then they just take out your blood on the fifth day. So for anybody who was thinking, oh, it's going to be horrible, it's going to be this, it's going to be that, for me, when I signed up for it, all they do is just you take the blood as normal, and then they just take an extra little vial of blood. So it really isn't as horrible as you think it is. It's exactly the same as giving blood. So if anybody's out there and they think, and it's a great thing to do, because there will always be people who need bone marrow transplants. And if you're ever on the fence about getting yourself on that list, definitely do it. Definitely do it, because it is so vital, as you well know, it's so incredibly vital. And if you're all right with giving blood, then you'll be all right with giving bone marrow samples. So that was just an aside, really, for me, that I thought, which is really, really important. So you said with the bone marrow transplant was about 15 months into Bella's life. Was that right?
Yeah. So we found out she had SCID at 11 months old. And from there, they took our blood and realized, okay, neither of you are a match. So just my husband and I, we didn't have her little brother at the time. So they're like, okay, we're going to put her on the national registry. And it only took about 2 months to find a donor. So that was relatively quick. That was good. But since Bella was already extremely immune compromised, dealing with Hirschsprung's in hospital, she was at high risk. So they wanted to find her a donor fast. So that even though it was just 2 months to find a donor, it was a hard wait because she wasn't allowed to eat. She wasn't allowed to risk aspiration. She was surviving off of IVs, and, 2 months seemed much longer, but in hindsight, it's actually a pretty quick way to find a donor. So they found her donor and set her up for a bone marrow transplant when she was 15 months old. So, that was such another interesting, mind-boggling week, the week before her bone marrow transplant. So at this point, we've been dealing with Hirschsprung's for a year of her vomiting, having bloated, backed up belly, extreme pain. And as soon as she gets gut rest, not allowed to eat anything, she's only on IV fluids, right? So if you think about it, this is gut rest and isolation for about, 3 months. And we start the chemotherapy they use prior to bone marrow transplant. So the way our doctor explained it to me, which was really great to understand, is SCID is like your body's full of weeds, and the chemo is like Roundup. Get in there and kill all those weeds, And then your body is fresh and open for the new stem cells to come in and do their job and give a new immune system. And it, you know, so many people are built to be so fearful of chemo and what it can do. Like, I remember the discussion saying, like, she's got no immune system. We're going to give her 8 days of chemo and hope she survives that, then give her the bone marrow. So that week was just like so stressful because, you know, like you're taking out their complete immune system. She doesn't have one already. I've seen her go septic and almost not survive. Now they're telling me they're going to give her 8 days of chemo. It was so stressful. Until we started the chemo, she never felt better. It was like literally like a miracle. They started the chemo and no, she quit vomiting. She had more energy. It was like her body was like, finally, like, thank you. I have all this junk inside. Get it out. So that was kind of strange. It was still scary though, because the risk came back on, you know, they warned me. They're like, okay, she has a central line. Those have huge risk of getting infected. It's a foreign body. Now you're giving her chemo. We've stripped her immune system completely. And it's like, okay, she needs this line to get a bone marrow transplant. Well, 2 days before the bone marrow transplant, it got infected. Her body was like, I have nothing to fight this. Now you're giving me chemo. Sorry, this foreign body has to go. So that was a close call. That was the second time she went septic and we almost lost her before her bone marrow transplant. It was a very, 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 very scary night. And what ended up happening is they had to take that line out immediately, give it 24 hours and put in a new line for the bone marrow transplant. And it was like just in the nick of time.
Right. So that's another headache can do without, really.
Yeah.
Very much.
Yeah. A lot of trauma.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And I think there will be quite a few people that will listen to this. And there's been a fair few people who've contacted me, who've gone through not the same journey, but very similar journeys on that sort of, and I guess one of the hard parts, really hard parts, is the waiting and the worrying. I mean, I guess, you know, for people like me, it was all right because I was asleep. I didn't worry about it. But my parents, I imagine, would have been up the wall. Were there any tips or, because I watched a video, a really good video of yours on emotional and mental health tips on children going through or having a children going through Hirschsprung's or various conditions and diseases. Would you be happy to share any of those from your YouTube channel?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Yeah, I have quite a, my poor YouTube gets put on the back burner quite a lot now that our TikTok is so massive. But a lot of my YouTube videos are from that first 2 years in hospital with Bella when she was just a baby. And I keep them up there. Like, it's hard to keep them up because she looks so, like, we're in hospital. She doesn't, you know, she's having a hard time. But there's so much in there that I know can help other moms and dads living in hospital with their little ones in these conditions or these conditions themselves. And knowing that they can hop over to our TikTok or recent YouTubes and see Bella thriving and doing so well, they can see that difference. I would say in those years, I mean, as hard as it is to go back there, and I was a completely different person. It was the years that molded me into being a medical mom. But my background is education. I've been a teacher you know, since I got out of university. And there was a lot of things living in that environment that helped me. It's the main reason I started my social media channel. We were in isolation for over 200 days, living in hospital for over 2 years straight. My only way to the outside world was Facebook, Instagram, and now TikTok. And I found that if I could be a little bit more vocal about what we were going through in like a respectful way, not just, I found the more I complained, the worse I felt. Because living in that environment, I saw other parents with their little ones. As horrible as the things we had to go through were, I always saw someone else go through something worse. And I think that trained my mind to think, okay, complaining is not helping you. Pick something else. Like the screaming and the crying and the stress out typing, like it's not helping you. It's not helping anybody else. So pick something else. And so then I really leaned on my faith and I leaned on other people in the, you know, the internet social community. I'm still like showing my age because I'm like, wait, what do you call this interweb? You know? So I found like if I could, even if I typed like something short or something I needed help with, if I could just get over that hump of asking for help, it made a world of difference in my life and Bella's life. I found being quiet in the corner, being sad about how my life was going, watching all my friends have their healthy children, and me living in hospital was so mentally and physically challenging. I knew that if I didn't train my mind to think positive and speak positive and ask for help, that it wasn't going to get better. So that took a lot of work, but I knew that's what I needed to do if I was going to live in that environment for a long time. And thank goodness, because it's been 10 years now. And I mean, it didn't come without, you know, seeing my doctor, talking to a mental health nurse, and making sure I made that happen for myself. Because I needed the energy to be by my daughter's side and help her through.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I think that's incredibly important. It's right what you said. You can, it's really, really easy to focus on the negatives. And yes, there are, you know, with anybody who goes through Hirschsprung's or goes through any illness, there are lots of things, lots of hurdles to get over. But it is important to focus on the positives. And I guess there are also, just through doing some work and some study on this, that there are some parts of Hirschsprung's that are positive. It doesn't seem so, certainly at the time. But one thing that I found personally and through other people I've spoken to is the resistance to pain that you end up, because you go through so many surgeries when you're really, really young. I've tended to find that, you know, I can be hit with various things and it doesn't hurt, and it probably should do. But it's things like that that you kind of take, and it seems a bit strange in a way, but I take that as a positive as opposed to like a negative, or I should be careful of this or that or the other. I think that's really, really important. And it's right what you said with having contact with other people. Part of the reason why I set this up is to contact people like yourself, people who can share incredible stories, who can, who've gone through Hirschsprung's, and letting people know that they're not alone. They're definitely not alone, and that there will be lots of inspirational stories out there. And yeah, and just letting people know really that, yes, you have Hirschsprung's. Yes, this. Lots of things associated with that, but that doesn't necessarily stop you from achieving great things. And on that subject, tell me a bit about Bella as a person.
She is so smart and you made me think back to, you know, I've had a lot of parents worry about how the effect of being in hospital will have on their kids. And a positive story that I always mention is with Bella, like, she's outgoing as a kid. And you would think the opposite, having the start to life that she had living in a hospital. But, you know, I think because she didn't leave the hospital until she was two years old and 1 week is when she left hospital. And so it's all she knew. She was born there and she lived there for the first 2 years of her life. And you would think that, but it's also like her baby years. They really do forget that. I'm still dealing with the fact that the trauma has altered me, and I'm grieving my mental health that I had prior to that trauma. But I'm so thankful that my child, you know, her age, it didn't affect her. And in some ways it had a positive effect. If you think about, you know, a new mom who brings their baby home and they're so alone at home for the first year of their life, like in Canada, we get a whole year of maternity leave. And it's really quite lonely for a lot of first-time moms. Here, I'm a first-time mom and my baby, and we see 15 to 20 people a day. And my daughter hears adult conversations by her bedside all day long, because that's me and the nurses and the doctors. And so her receptive and expressive vocal abilities, like to speak and to understand, were in like the 96th percentile when she was 8, 9 months old. She was saying her first words at 10 months old, and she had about 5, 10 of them. And I remember the speech therapist, because I had so many therapies coming in thinking, okay, this family's been in hospital like 6 months now, looking to another year because of her bone marrow transplant. And I remember a lot of them coming in: physiotherapy, occupational therapy, speech therapy, social workers, you know, mental health, and they were all focused on Bella. And a lot of them would be like, she's doing amazing. She's doing better than kids her age, mentally, cognitively. So that was really a positive light for me in such like a hard, dark time as a first time mom. And that's still Bella today. That she is very vocal. She's not shy. She's really confident. And I have a lot of people tell me, they're like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Like, you need to, like, that's you, mom. Like, Kyla, you did that. And I often forget, it was a big worry of mine that with her dwarfism, with being in hospital and all the procedures that, you know, having an ostomy, having a central line, having a G2 button, I was like, okay, I want to build her confidence, because when she gets out of here and is in public and meets friends and goes to school, she's got to do that in a whole different light than the average kid. And so my main focus was, okay, build her confidence so that she'll have the ability to deal with anything that might, you know, really scare the average kid going back into like a public environment. Yeah. So I'm happy to say that that's stuck with her. She is not shy. She is still very vocal. She's constantly asking me to do TikToks and sing online and sing like on a stage and dance. And she goes to school and she's in fifth grade. She's got sixth graders, like three times her height, in the lockers beside her. And she's just like, hey, like, it's just like,
not worried,
not worried. I'm just like, okay, now do I need to teach you what you should be worried about? So
that's fantastic. That's absolutely fantastic. That's absolutely brilliant. So she's not afraid, not worried. You said that she was very much into singing. I've seen some TikToks. I'm sure some people are listening here have seen TikToks and Instagram of her singing. You said, I think she was into fashion as well. I think you said as well.
Oh yeah. She hops around in the arts so much. She really loved the last couple of years. She loved sewing. Now she's in the pottery. She's always loved dance. Dance is like number one. And now singing. She's really like discovered her. Well, I shouldn't say discovered. She's just like, she wants to be more professional about it. She's always loved singing, but now she's like, okay, like for Christmas, she's like, I want a professional mic stand. She has taken some singing lessons in the past, but we're going to get some more of those going soon. Always into fashion, very much into fashion, designing, but also wearing fashion.
Yeah. Fantastic. Well, that's absolutely brilliant. Fantastic. No, that's really, really good. This would be sort of the end of the first episode. I want to lead in to the second episode with the big moment that we'll tell in the next episode. So just to give people a flavor of what happened to you and Bella in August 2023, before we sort of do a bit more of a deep dive into it, what would you say as a flavor for episode two coming out in a couple of weeks?
I would say in that moment, in that time, it was life-changing in a sense that everything on my mind before that day was me fighting against the thoughts of how I'm going to manage the death of my 9-year-old child. And that day changed everything, and I don't have to think that way any longer.
Fantastic. Well, thank you very much, and we shall see you in the next episode.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the Hirschsprungs Hour on UK Health Radio. You can find me on Facebook under Tom's Hirschsprungs Podcast or Instagram on Tom's_Hirschsprungs_podcast. I hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll bring you another episode soon.